the rest of the story. The kings of Spain for more than 200 years after Columbus kept themselves popular and kept their country prosperous with a gold umbilical cord between Spain and the Indies. Flotillas of Spanish armed galleons would fetch spices, ivory, and fabric from the Orient, and then in Mexico and Peru and Colombia trade for silver and gold and emeralds. These freight trains of the sea began the last leg of their homebound journey in Cuba. Now, even a cursory glance at a navigation chart of the Caribbean reveals a blue-green gauntlet of islets, reefs, and shallows, which Spanish sea captains had to negotiate without charts, without sonar, without any means of anticipating weather, and thus, from 1520 to 1770, homebound treasure vessels were frequently driven aground by hurricane winds. Spanish Admiralty records reveal that one in four of these frail vessels with their precious cargoes never made it. Paul Harvey, are you saying that the bottom of the Caribbean is paved with gold? Yes. Literally. Probably, discounting what's already been recovered by salvors, there remains enough treasure beyond Florida's Keys to pay off our national debt several times over. From just one wrecked ship, the Atocha, Mel Fisher has recovered gold, silver, and artifacts valued at $400 million. And he estimates twice that much is still down there on this one wreck site. State and federal laws presently are attempting to prevent further harvest. But anyway, Spain was careful to catalog and record the cargo of each galleon. Gold bars were stamped with a crown seal, carefully weighed and assayed. Silver coins dated themselves. They were similarly weighed, counted, and taxed. The kings thus protected their investment in these hazardous voyages by collecting their 20% quintal. Often, however, the passenger list included noblemen, merchants who returned to Spain with personal wealth, untaxed in the form of gold chains, some of them 12 feet long, wrapped around their bodies, underneath their garments, out of sight to Spain's tax collectors when the boats docked back home. A single link removed from one of those heavy gold chains might finance the merchant's lifestyle for several months. A single link might be traded for as many as 5 slaves. Now, I've been spending some time with Mel Fisher and his wife Dio and their family and their crew. Artifacts being carefully preserved and cataloged for the Fisher Museums give us some priceless hindsight, and I've gleaned from this ocean bottom harvest an object lesson which I trust is too obvious to require elaboration. From the stones and the bones and the booty on the bottom of the ocean, each shipwreck had one significant result. When a treasure ship was blown onto the reefs or rocks, part of the wooden vessel would usually remain intact and afloat long enough for at least some crew to save themselves or to be rescued. But the greedy, wealthy, wrapped in all that beautiful, undeclared, untaxed, smuggled gold, took it with him to Davy Jones' locker. In fact, the elegant passengers draped in all that dead weight, they sank first. Now you know the rest of the story.